sports fans, dig out your bad contracts and horrible hires, because it's time for Judd Zolgad's Terrible Executive Pecking Order.
I wonder where this could be from. Maybe it's new columnist from SI.com?
David Kahn. David Kahn, because ultimately I didn't take Steph Curry in 2009 because I got bullied by an agent and a focus group swayed me.
That's pretty much what he said, right? That there were some companies that...
He indicted himself even more as being a complete buffoon.
Yeah. I do wonder if he had gone against the wishes of Del Curry and the agent, and they draft Steph Curry. Does Curry bolt after 4 years? But you would have had Kevin Love and Steph Curry from 09 through 2013.
That team
would have made the playoffs at least two of those years.
The only compelling case in a situation like that not to take a player is if that player has a second sport, Elway with baseball, or there's a separate league. ABA or something. There's not. If Steph Curry had said, I absolutely am not going to play for your team, guess what? You don't play anywhere other than Europe.
It is kind of funny, too, in retrospect. You know, and I think we all thought Rubio was going to be a star player. Maybe Rubio came up a little short of what we thought. But he said, well, Rubio and Curry both indicated in different ways that they weren't going to play for the Wolves. Yes. So we wanted to hedge our bets. We'll take Flynn with one of them because we know he'll play for us.
Yes.
And then we'll just choose one of the others. And he liked Rubio better than he liked Steph Curry.
And to this day, he still thinks Johnny Flynn was fantastic. That darn injury.
Damn hip injury. Yeah. So you have a pecking order for us today.
Yes. My personal 10 worst sports executives, not coaches, sports executives to grace the landscape in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
So many possibilities here.
Yes.
Okay.
Number 10. This man hasn't been a general manager in 60-some-odd years of a team. But darn it, he was one. He was an instrumental part of this team. That up and moved on us, and I'm going to hold that against him, my former colleague, Sid Hartman.
Wow!
GM of the Lakers. Come on, the team left town. Sid, what'd you do wrong? That's my question. If you're going to be so responsible, Sid Hartman, the number 10 ineffective sports executive. Once again, you're a sports writer, David Kahn. You're a sports writer, Sid Hartman. Stick to that job.
Do you have the grapefruits to put Lou Nanny in this top 10? For never delivering a cup to the home state.
Well, you're just going to have to wait and find out. I'm not going to spill those beans. Not yet.
Put Lou in.
Number 9 on my list. This is the only current sports executive in this town on my list. But he joined this team in 2006. He took over this team as GM after the 2011 season. He remains the GM of this team. And in that time span with them, he has only one playoff win. Rick Spielman, welcome to the club.
It's true.
Welcome to the club. You've had several chances in different forms to certainly have a few playoff runs. You've only had one playoff victory. Number 8 on my list, the first executive to run the Timberwolves, starting a long line of ineptitude, Bob Stein, the former Gopher. Bob Stein, who among other things, was instrumental in the hiring of Bill Musselman. Mussy would win games at all costs. You are, as an expansion team, here's what you got going for you. You got a new product, you got an excited fan base, and most importantly, you have a fan base that for a good 3 to 5 years says, we probably expect to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You hired a coach who could bleed victories out of Harrigan, Mackey, and Zolgad. You basically had a coach who tried to win on a nightly basis at the very time that you should have been as bad as possible. Bob Stein, a football guy playing basketball, what were you thinking?
Okay.
He's number 8. Number 7 is a guy who in 1961 we celebrated as a hero on the sports landscape. But whenever we default to our so-and-so is cheap, they won't pay, it started with this guy, Calvin Griffith. The Twins, now Calvin owned the team, but he ran the club, and the Twins teams that I began following in 1978, who wouldn't pay a soul, who watched Bostock and Heisel leave, and Carew got dealt, that was on Calvin, the original Mr. Cheap in this town, and a guy who at one time ran a very respectable organization, but when baseball started to change, had no interest in changing with it, and he was too poor to as well, Calvin Griffith. Number 6. Another guy who got an expansion team had made an awful trade in his previous stop with Calgary. Goes and hires Jacques Lemaire, who's a great coach, but once again, all Jacques wants to do is win with his trapping style. Doug Riseborough. Now, you're going to go say, but Jed, what are you talking about? The Wild in 2003 conference final run. Guess what? In 2003, that's not necessary. I would have much rather
what,
had...
What?
I would
Whoa,
have much rather...
So
that's not necessary. You know why?
What do you mean? You're punished... What?
You
he
are
dragged...
Too much success.
Too
you
much success.
Suck.
You wait
Too
a
much
second.
Success too early. What you want to do as
that's
an expansion
absurd.
Team... What you want to do as an expansion team is build something. It was a fun run, but in retrospect, Doug Riseborough...
This is classic Judd.
...did this team a disservice. Jacques was a marvelous coach, but he trapped. And the trapping style, you can get players that aren't great to win...
I agree.
It was mussy-like.
You want to put that steak on the grill at a nice 350, and somebody put it on at 550 and burn the hell out of it.
It was too early, but anyway,
wait
Doug,
a second.
Doug
a second.
Riseborough's number six on
so
my list.
So Doug Riseborough took a collection of misfits and
well,
non-stars.
No, Jacques did.
Okay.
Jacques
Lemaire.
Right, exactly. When you should have hired, you should have started with a coach, once again, just like Bob Stein. You want to start with a coach. It's okay to lose. You've got the honeymoon.
Doug Riseborough.
Take the honeymoon.
Put together... a collection of players and a coach that overachieved beyond anyone's expectations, and you're putting him and you're punishing
the team,
him for that.
He let when Doug Riseborough was eventually fired by Leopold. When he was fired by Leopold, the organization was in poor shape, and the piece de resistance from Doug Riseborough was the Chris Simon trade at the deadline when he got a guy who I believe had been charged with a crime at some point in time. He got Chris Simon in his big deal. The guy was a goon. It was an embarrassment. Riseborough left the team in bad shape. Doug Riseborough's number six.
Now, that would have been a viable reason to put him on your list.
No,
but
the
to,
whole...
Like,
no.
To punish him
but
for
it's
taking...
a fraudulent
no,
region coming from Judd.
You don't want to win. You don't need to win early in your expansion time. You've got the honeymoon.
All
Use
right.
it.
Keep going.
We'll save it.
Number five... Number five, I'm splitting... Be quiet. I'm splitting hairs here, so this is very important to listen to. Number five on my list is Terry Ryan 2.0. Terry Ryan 1.0 was fantastic. I know that the Twins lost for a long time with him, but go back and look at the trades, look at some of the draft picks. Terry Ryan's first stint had a long, rough patch, but when the Twins came out of it around 2001... they were on the cutting edge of what you wanted from a baseball executive. The Twins' biggest mistake, I think, in their target field tenure was November 2011 when they fired Bill Smith and brought Terry back. That's when they should have said, we need to go outside. They didn't. Terry Ryan 2.0 to me will be defined by many things, but a couple are the Span trade and Revere trade. Mm-hmm. Those are trades that if he made them in 1997 or 98, he made marvelous trades. Both of them didn't work. Terry Ryan 2.0 is my number five.
Okay.
Number four, the aforementioned Bill Smith. Now, Bill Smith, yes, Sanoa is on his plate. He made some good draft picks. But when you look at Bill Smith and look at what he did, Bill Smith has a role in a franchise. And for the Twins, that was helping build things. Literally, in Fort Myers, like the spring training complex. Bill Smith was never, ever meant to run a baseball franchise. In fact, it's not even all his fault. The promotion was a massive mistake, and I would argue that Terry Ryan's first mistake was telling the Twins, I'm quitting, hire Bill Smith. Number three.
Boy, this is a juicy list.
Number three, the highly controversial, and he did some good things, but his one bad thing is so bad he makes my top three, Mike Lynn. The Herschel Walker trade, if you go back and watch the 30 for 30 short on that trade and realize that Jimmy Johnson of the Cowboys fooled Mike Lynn into giving him players, and then he fooled him by putting in a clause that said, for every player I cut, I get your draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
One of the dumbest trades in sports history.
Can you give me again the exact years that Mike Lynn was the GM of the Vikings?
If not all of the 80s. Into the very early 90s,
so like
maybe?
Like 90, 91?
Until, yeah. But I believe, and so they did have some success. I'm just basing this on one of the worst trades in sports history.
Sure.
He got completely bamboozled.
Yeah. Oh, of course, the Vikings went on to make the playoffs almost every year after that.
But it's still a terrible trade. Awful trade. Number two on my list, two and one aren't going to surprise you. Number two, Kevin McHale. The Garnett pick is a great pick. But if you look at
the
how...
Kevin Love pick was a pretty good pick. It bookended pretty
but,
well.
But if you look at how the organization disintegrated, organization, Dave Harrigan, disintegrated under McHale, that's on him. And then number one, completing the slam dunk, has to be David Kahn. David Kahn has to be considered the most ineffective, biggest moron sports executive to ever grace our landscape.
Wow, juicy list. Okay, fly through it real quick, and then right. And then Dave and I will
1 through 10
poke holes or agree or whatever next segment.
1 through 10. Kahn, McHale, Mike Lynn, Bill Smith, Terry Ryan, 2.0. That's my top five. Doug Risebrough, Calvin Griffith, Bob Stein, Rick Spielman, Sid Hartman. The Lakers left. It's your fault. Is number 10.
Okay. This is very juicy. The 10 worst executives in Minnesota sports history. We will react to that list when we come back.
Hang on. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
It hurts, but it's true.
It hurts, but it's true.
On 1500 ESPN.
Rise and shine, sports fans. Dig out your bad contracts and horrible hires, because it's time for Judd Zolgad's Terrible Executive Pecking Order.
So you ranked...
I'm proud of my list.
The 10 worst...
I got Sid Hartman in it.
The 10 worst Minnesota sports executives. Now, I noticed you didn't include athletic directors.
Yeah, no, I kept it pro sports.
Okay, because you could, I guess you could include athletic directors.
Yeah, that would have been a long list then if I...
Although, I guess, Joel Mathury... Joel Mathury wasn't terrible.
Joel was not the problem.
So, yeah, that's kind of...
Woody would have made the list.
Yeah, and there's a... you could maybe split hairs on some gophers, but a tweet coming in here from Al for your list. I assume at 1500 ESPN, Judd thinks Dave Dombrowski is terrible for leading the expansion Marlins to a World Series title in just 4 years.
No, he won a title. If you can win a title, good for you. All I'm saying is the Wild got to the Western Conference Finals, and when Risebrough left, the organization was not in good shape. He left in bad shape. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to do?
But you came out of the gate and you put Risebrough as the sixth worst GM.
I am not a fan of trying to win with an expansion team. I'm not. I'm not a fan.
He didn't then. Okay, like he got...
But he hired, but here's the thing. Mussie and
Jock... You got to pick one or the other. You can't punish him for winning and then punish him also for not winning.
I'll give it to you straight here.
Please do.
Mussie and Jacques Lemaire both had their attributes going for them. But what they could do is they could bleed victories out of teams in years where you're more than willing to lose because the fans are going to turn out because you're new. That's when you accumulate what? Your really high draft picks. You go, I think, as an expansion team, for the most part, I think what you do in your first 3 years is those are the years where you say, we have a very good chance to get first overall picks if possible.
Okay, I want you to give an honest answer. In the middle of overtime against the Colorado Avalanche 2003 postseason, were you praying for the Avalanche to score a goal?
No, it's too late.
To
then.
Knock the Wild down a peg?
No.
Were you rooting against the Wild Were you rooting against the Wild in the Western Conference Finals 03?
I have said for 17 years now, though, that hiring a coach that can win games just for the sake of winning games as an expansion team is not a great idea. It's not.
Dave's just in there laughing his ass.
What are you laughing at? This is the most sound logic I've ever brought to this show.
So you've got your expansion team. You got a bunch of players, a bunch of misfits, whatever.
Yeah.
What kind of a coach do you want then? You don't need to give me a name, but you want a guy that's going to tell him, hey, when you shoot, aim a few feet to the left of the net. It's fine if we miss.
I want a coach.
Offsides is fine.
Okay, what I want is a coach who understands why he's there. And that's to help develop my young talent.
Okay.
And if he can win a game or two, that's fine. But I don't want a coach who has a system.
Can develop it well enough to win?
No. Here's what you're missing. What you're missing is this. I don't want a coach who has a system in place that's going to bleed victories for the sake of getting them, when what I want to do is player development, and I also want my high draft picks.
It just
seems that... The trapping system leads to boring victories because the system can work. But it doesn't mean that that's a system as an expansion franchise I'd like to play.
Okay, we don't need to argue about the trapping system, but it still seems like if it's going to work, you need to teach the players and develop them to learn how to at least play in that system, and that's at least some form of
good
hockey.
Want your, but I would like your system as an expansion coach. What I would like is the system. It can be offensive, but what I want is I want to develop my young players. That's what I want to do. I don't want a bunch of veterans. I want to develop young players.
So if Doug Risebrough had had tanked a few more years and maybe drafted star players, one or two.
He wasn't a great GM.
Okay, I really love the addition of Terry Ryan 2.0 on this list at number 5 of worst executives. Because Terry Ryan 1.0 would be top 5 executive. Like the Terry Ryan that led the Contraction Twins to division titles. That's one of the better executives in Minnesota sports history. But Terry Ryan 2.0, you guys ever seen those Christopher Reeve Superman movies from the 70s?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've
and there's one of them. There's one of them where I believe he falls in love with Lois Lane, and Clark Kent just decides, you know what? I don't need my powers anymore. And so he voluntarily gives away his powers and then gets his butt kicked at a bar by that trucker guy. Like, Terry Ryan 2.0 is Christopher Reeve giving away his powers in Superman and just getting smoked by the rest of the league. No longer could swindle big trades, could no longer identify top pitching talent in the minor leagues, no longer sold high in the correct spot on players.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Hicks was traded away for John Ryan Murphy and then 12 months later blows up and turns into this monster in the Bronx. Trades away Span and Revere and gets Vance Worley and a bucket of baseballs back and Alex Meyer. So, yeah, Terry Ryan 2.0. But Bill Smith, because you have Bill Smith just above Terry Ryan 2.0.
Yeah. And I could have flipped him.
He deserves credit for Miguel Sano. And you know what? He did identify that Carlos Gomez would eventually be a good player. Just happens that he also was impatient with him and probably left him in the big leagues a little bit too long. Nishi, Hardy for Hoey, all kinds of scrap heap pitchers during the Bill Smith and Terry Ryan 2.0 eras. So. Mm-hmm. I like those, but it's really hard to disagree with David Kahn and Kevin McHale at the top. Now, both of them, I thought Kahn made a good hire in Rick Adelman at the time, but Rick Adelman, that was a retirement job, and his wife was sick, yeah. And there was a bunch of stuff going on there.
Yes.
Kevin McHale gets credit for Kevin Garnett and for Kevin Love, but in and around those bookends, between Kahn and Kevin McHale, it's almost impossible to argue anyone else in the top two spots on this list. So, bravo on your list.
Well,
I agree
you.
With most of your list.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if I would have put Risebrough 6th on the list.
I want to talk about Sid at 10. I think Sid is a deserving 10. He hasn't gotten nearly enough heat for the fact that Bob Short took the Lakers to Los Angeles. I mean, if Sid's so powerful in this town, he should have stopped him.
Did Sid make a bunch of bad personnel moves? Do we know that? Because that team was really good when they moved to L.A., weren't they?
Yes.
Or did they spiral
down?
No,
I'm blaming him for one thing. He's number 10 because it's the one thing. The team left on us.
Face the Facts chimes in on Twitter here. David Kahn was only around for 4 years, so his impact was hardly large enough to be the worst. I beg to differ. His impact was large enough to make it so that the Golden State Warriors are a dynasty and the Minnesota Timberwolves continue their stretch of a decade and a half of missing the playoffs.
Consider McHale at 2 and Kahn at 1 to sort of be like a alley-oop pass. McHale to Kahn. It's sort of the same.
Yeah.
It's a baton. So you go from McHale, who eventually, I think, just sort of checked out, right? It seemed like he checked out, to Kahn, to now, I believe we are at 13 years of no playoffs.
Rick Spielman is 9th on your list, and that's a tough one because, you know, that's a decade plus stretch with one playoff victory, not much stability at quarterback.
Yep,
really a mediocre to bad offensive line for at least half of that period, but never atrocious. You know, with some of these other guys, with Kahn and McHale and Bill Smith and Terry Ryan 2.0.
Yep.
The teams were bottom of the barrel bad. The Vikings have only been that maybe once or twice under Spielman. They've to the Vikings' credit, going back decades,
yep,
they've never had those 5 to 10 year stretches like the Lions or the Browns or the Bears where you're just bottom feeding.
Here's the Spielman dynamic that I think is probably fair to bring up. No matter what you think of the Wilfs, they give you a pretty good system in which to operate. Like, you don't look at the Wilfs and say, oh, cheapskates. You don't look at the Wilson.
Yeah, they're willing to spend a lot of money.
I mean, they have spent on a lot of things. They strike me as if you're a GM, they'd be good to work for, and therefore I expect more than one playoff victory when you get hired in 2006 and basically are handed the keys to the entire car in 2012.
Actually, the Wilfs now, you know, I think from a public standpoint, they've made the public pay for a record chunk of money.
I'm talking about the team itself.
But just for if you're a GM looking to work for NFL bosses, they've opened up the checkbook and they've okayed huge moves like Jared Allen and a contract extension, paying Brett Favre $1 million a game at age 40. They've opened up their checkbook for things like that.
Yes.
They've gotten you a new practice facility. They got you a new stadium. So just from a GM standpoint,
you'd be very happy.
They've done a lot of things to push the ball forward.
And they have one playoff win. If I'm them, I'm not too pleased about that.
Superman 2, as Ryan chimes in. Okay. Superman 2 is the
one. I think I saw that. It's just been so long.
I think there was four of them. And they jumped the shark after about maybe halfway through the first one, actually. Dave, what kind of stuff do you have for us next?
Very good stuff, including the new drama in Cleveland we'll get to, controversy on the diamond, Joe Buck explaining mistakes, and do you guys know who opened up for Don Henley at the X couple nights ago?
No.
Don't. I will share that information with you, too.
Sit tight. No. Mackie and Judd resume things following these messages.
That's the result you won't get!
On 1500 ESPN.
And this portion of Mackie and Judd is sponsored by Jersey Mike's Subs. Grab a sub and a 32-ounce Pepsi at Jersey Mike's, and you could win the music trip of a lifetime. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends August 14th. See official rules at PepsiRockThisWay.com.
Stuff you should know about right here. Get your stuff you should know about.
Pass your cash to the end of the aisle, and we'll pass back some stuff you should know about. Here's Dave Harrigan.
What you got for us, Dave Harrigan?
A fly ball to right field. It's deep. It's on its way. And Bellinger hits another one out. Turner and Bellinger go back to back. And the Dodgers lead 7-0. The rout is on. And we're not even finished with the second inning.
Yeah, that Cody Bellinger can hit the baseball. 51 games now, 21 home runs. He's the fastest player ever to get to 21 home runs in terms of games played. He has now 5 multi-home run games in his major league career of 51 total, boys.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And the Twins, if you remember, when the Twins were engaged in the offseason, Brian Dozier trade talks with the Dodgers, mm-hmm. and Jose De Leon was the pitcher name we kept hearing about because you thought they needed to use Brian Dozier. They already have Polanco. They got Nick Gordon coming up. They got guys who can play middle infield. They need pitching. Well, Cody Bellinger was the position player prospect they were trying to get from the Dodgers, according to reports. I don't know how close they came to landing De Leon and Bellinger in the same deal, but could you imagine? And Bellinger's been twice the hitter that Dozier's been so far this year. So the Dodgers clearly made the right decision by not pulling the trigger on a Bellinger trade for Dozier.
If the Dodgers had made that trade with the Twins, we would be paranoid right now that Falvey was going to the Yankees or Red Sox. If he had been able to get both those guys, we'd be talking today about how I sure hope that the current administration doesn't go to the Yankees or the Red Sox because they've done such a good job that they're certainly going to leave us.
Note from Christopher Komka of CSN Chicago, the first 5 players to reach 20 home runs this year.
Yep.
Aaron Judge hit 4 home runs in the majors last year. Yep. Eric Thames, none. Bellinger, 0. Logan Morrison, 14. Justin Smoke, 14.
Yeah.
How about some new blood?
Justin Smoke has 20 now, exactly. I believe that ties his previous career high, and we're not even in July yet. So that's a late bloomer. In Toronto, Justin Smoke is now the third guy that Toronto has taken, late 20s or 30 years old, mediocre for the most part, and then all of a sudden, just a power surge.
Just a coincidence.
Do you think they're just like shipping PEDs in Toronto and no one else has access to?
I just think it's interesting.
Is that what you're saying?
National health care. Come on, get whatever you want for $2.
Not saying anything.
I think that's the rule anyway.
I think it's interesting.
You remember this from yesterday. We played yesterday. It happened Sunday, of course.
His girlfriend, Becky Edwards, All-American soccer player at Florida State.
Joe, that's actually his new girlfriend. That's Jenna Sims.
Whoops.
They were all staying together this week.
Brad Faxon on the correction of Joe Buck. Well, Buck on Dan Patrick yesterday talking about it. I think.
I've done way worse than this. That's the funny thing. But it was before the age of Twitter and kind of clickbait stuff when I asked Tony Womack at the end of a division series game when he was hugging a woman down on the field and I was interviewing him from the booth, who, truth be told, I couldn't really see, but we had just been talking about how he lost his dad on Father's Day that year, and he's hugging this woman, and I said, hey, Tony, yeah, I can't imagine how that feels. Who are you hugging down there? Is that your mom? And then the needle came off the record, and he goes, no, that's my wife.
Oh,
and you talk about feeling bad. I mean, this is the week-old girlfriend. I think the world will continue to spin, but when I just confuse somebody's wife for the guy's mother, that I actually sent her flowers and went down and apologized, and he was great about it, and so was she.
Wow.
Yep, that's embarrassing. That is embarrassing. In fairness, he was up in the upper deck. Tough to see. Now, if he had been like face to face, it would have been way worse.
Timberwolves have a new sponsor, a 3-year deal with Fitbit to get a little patch on the jersey. This is from Johnny K at the AP announcing the deal today. We'll say Fitbit will also be featured in the renovated Target Center, including logging the new concession offerings into the Fitbit food section to help users make healthier choices.
Oh, you mean that big bucket of nachos with cheese and meat dripping all over?
Might not be good for you.
Might not be the best thing to put in
this
your body.
This just in. That might be bad for you.
So do you go through the list? Hot dog. Damn. Nachos. Damn.
Mini donuts. Damn. Ah, son of a...
I can't get anything.
Can I have an apple? No, we don't sell those.
Yeah, they might want to include some more salad bar-y options if Fitbit is going to be the main sponsor.
Collision at the plate.
And the pitch. Line to center field. Coming in is Caesar to make the catch. Tagging is Rizzo. Here comes the throw. It's going to be close, and he will be out after Hedges holds on to the baseball. Austin Hedges is slow to get up, but he holds on to the baseball as Matt Caesar throws out Anthony Rizzo, and the Padres continue with the lead.
You guys see the highlight at all?
I did, yeah. We don't see many of those anymore.
You don't, and the manager of the Padres, Andy Green, calling it fairly egregious, disheartening, and a cheap shot. Anthony Rizzo going head first into the Padres catcher, and he absolutely had a path to the plate.
So what happens then? So it's because the rules are designed to get rid of those collisions.
Really, nothing happened, at least last night. Major League Baseball, I'm sure, could come through with a suspension or a fine. But nothing happened last night. They just called him out and the inning was over.
If the catcher blocks the plate, the runner could be called safe because the catcher's obstructing.
Can't block the plate.
But if the catcher's off the side and you still plow him, there's no punishment. Shouldn't it be that you're out or... If they really want to stick to the rules.
And he was out. I mean, he was tagged out.
Oh, okay. So
the catcher, you know, had the ball.
So he did have a path, though?
Absolutely. The catcher was in front of home plate, and you can see the slide if you watch the replay from the overhead camera. He goes right into him and then kind of falls over onto the plate after being tagged out anyway. But, yeah, it was 100% intentional. Let's get it back to the old school days of Charlie Hustle.
Yeah, get out of the – once you get off the tracks when the train's coming through.
Get out on the way.
Dave McMenamin on the turmoil in Cleveland.
Basically, David Griffin decided to walk away from continuing the negotiations because he did not feel like there would be a fit or a match between the way, you know, Dan Gilbert sees this team entering into the future and the direction David Griffin would like to take it after leaving them to 3 straight NBA finals. I'm not sure what this type of move signals to the rest of the league as to the stability of the Cavs franchise right now.
And there's LeBron bringing the drama back to Twitter. If no one appreciated you, Griff, I did. And hopefully all the people of Cleveland. Thanks for what you did for the team for 3 years. We got us one emoji championship trophy thing.
Translation, hey, Griff, thank you so much for just letting me make all the personnel moves and just being a figurehead and a puppet for me. That was awesome.
Is this franchise ever not a soap opera?
Well, LeBron James, no, it's not this franchise. Yeah. It's LeBron James that's
but
a soap opera.
There's always something going on here, and it always you always say, is this necessary? I think it's a combination. I think LeBron loves it, and Gilbert embraces it too. I think when you write your superstar a note in Comic Sans the day he leaves. I think you show yourself to be a guy that loves the drama.
It's also possible that Gilbert feels complacent. Gilbert got a championship. LeBron came back and Gilbert got a championship. In Dan Gilbert's run early on, when LeBron James was a younger player and before he left the first time, did that organization really scream urgency to win a championship? They had LeBron, but it wasn't like they did a ton of stuff to make the organization this top-end organization with top talent. They had Larry Hughes and Anton Jameson and a bunch of just sort of third-tier players around LeBron. So it's possible that LeBron is still, because he hears all the chatter of, you got to catch Jordan, you got to catch Magic, you got to catch all these guys, you got to catch the Warriors, and he wants to go. And they're already paying more money for their roster than any team, and they're well over the luxury tax. And maybe Dan Gilbert's sitting there saying, I don't want LeBron James to run my team anymore. And he sort of has the ear of Griffin. I got my championship, and I'm gonna do it my way. I would think that would be if he's doing it that way, then LeBron's gonna leave after the next year and go play for the Lakers or somebody. Makes it fun.
Let's pull this music down for the final item. Thankfully, intern Charlie alerted me to this. This is the band that was opening for Don Henley at the X Sunday night. Here's a little listen. A little Americana, we call it.
Better find a church. Better find it soon. Better search through the night.
A little tune called Better Find a Church.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If you guys had $1.5 billion, what would you do? If it was just anything you could do with your money, what would you want to do?
Was that Jim Polad?
No. The band is called JD and the Straight Shot.
All right.
I would probably, if I had, so you have money for generations.
Anything you
can
do.
And all day to do whatever?
Not a worry in the world.
I think it'd be really fun to master a musical instrument and go play in front of people. Yeah.
Oh, I would.
It'd be in my top five list of things to do.
I would buy a brownstone in New York and the wild.
You'd just buy the wild.
Buy the wild.
I'd buy the wild from Craig, yeah.
Little one called Perdition.
I like this. This is good.
Can you give us a hint as to who this is?
Well, JD and the Smooth Shot is the name of the band.
I like this.
JD is the guy with all the money.
All right.
Is this JD singing?
Yes.
Don't tell us. Hold on. JD. Give us like some other hint. How did this person make their money? Or can you hint at how this person...
Well, I can tell you they're a professional sports owner.
Really? With MC, I'd say Mark Cuban started singing.
East Coast.
Oh, James Dolan?
James Dolan.
That's James... This is James Dolan.
This is James Dolan.
You're kidding me.
Meanwhile, the Madison Square Garden is on fire right now.
His chief basketball executive's about to trade Porzingis, and he's at the X singing.
He also opened for Henley in Cincinnati and Chicago last week. This one is Glide.
Down the Eastern Conference standings.
Oh, that's terrible.
I'm guilty. I like this.
I was putting these songs in our little system.
Oh, Glide. Yeah, I've heard this song. This is a note to Carmelo Anthony's defense.
Wow. This is right up my alley. I feel terrible.
Intern Charlie walks in the building this morning. I said, I grabbed a few of those cuts. I kind of like it. I'm embarrassed to admit it's not terrible. Horrible.
I like the...
He's way better at this than running an NBA franchise.
Get rid of the teams, man, and just keep doing this.
I've done some research about the band, and basically it sounds good because he's a halfway decent sort of singer, but he basically just hired the best backup musicians he could find to make him sound great and prop him up. So
that's
what
genius.
The hell, man? If you got a billion and a half, let's go tour. What's that?
Who writes this?
He's apparently at least co-written a good portion of it.
Meanwhile, while James Dolan, the owner of the Knicks, is touring around with Don Henley, a report just came out less than a half hour ago that Phil Jackson is considering trading Kristaps Porzingis before the
Dolan
trade.
Dolan might want to go home and find out what the hell's going
Phil
on.
Phil Jackson making $9 million a year to sabotage the Knicks and go back to L.A. at some point is about to trade the Knicks' best young player.
And this guy's going around singing with Don Henley.
Where's our next tour stop?
The band goes back to 05.
Sure about the trade?
New album upcoming. This is the single coming off of it.
They're locked
I know,
away
you know, I know.
In our hearts so deep.
Okay. Yeah, that's good
but
stuff.
When I look into your eyes, they melt away.
It's
my
not awful.
Cold disguise.
No. Again, he's like way better at this than running an NBA franchise.
And I know you know.
You know, we have some mocking to do, too.
Yes, we do.
I think when we come back here, we might have to dive into some mocking. Dan Gladden will join at 11:30, and we're going to steal a question from our buddy Mike Rand, StarTribune.com, at 11 o'clock about if the other three pro sports teams had expansion drafts coming up, who would we protect? So we're going to get to that as well.
Racers, start your engines. Cars 3 Driven to Win is the new competitive racing video game that provides an exhilarating, action-packed experience with beloved characters from the Cars 3 film. Friends and family can easily join the race and the fun at any time. Cars 3 Driven to Win, available for PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo Switch, and Wii U. You can also head to the 1500 ESPN Stream Player, the new Stream Player, to see how you can win a PS4 copy of Cars 3 Driven to Win. And this portion of Mackie and Judd is sponsored by Menards.
Thank you, David. I want to read some feedback real quick from our Facebook page. We put the Jimmy Butler debate up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/1500ESPN. You can check out all kinds of stuff there. We have various items from the show. We have all kinds of links to columns and articles, video content, you name it, podcasts. And we just threw the question out. Would you trade Andrew Wiggins for 28-year-old Jimmy Butler, 3 years left on his contract? And just to paraphrase our arguments, you'd like immediate excitement injected into a stale, dormant franchise, which is understandable. I'm much more on the fence, leaning toward Jimmy Butler is amazing, and he would make your team better right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you'd be cutting off the upside of your team while the Warriors are dominating the West. Mm-hmm. So I would avoid peaking before having to. And here's some responses from people. Maxwell says, Wiggins is 22, Butler's 27. Wiggins still getting better. Butler has peaked, but probably has 3 to 4 awesome years left. Western Conference is stacked. Getting Butler for any of your under 23 solid core players while Golden State is stacked for 3 more years means keeping the core is important. So we will be in our prime when there's a great window to do so. So he kind of agrees with me.
Mm-hmm.
Others say, Brian says, absolutely I'd make the trade. If your only reason is you can't make the NBA Finals with LeBron and Steph around, then deal off everyone and tank. Wiggins will never be in Butler's class, and Butler's the veteran guy Minnesota needs next to Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, and that becomes the question. Is Andrew at a point where he is going to continue to develop, or is he going to continue to develop, but the frustrating things that we've talked about for the past 2 years are going to stay there? I have no clue.
Yeah, he's got to get better at defense. He's, you know, it's encouraging that he has gone into the last offseason was very encouraging. He skipped the national team stuff for Canada, and he did two-a-days to get better at shooting.
Yeah, which was great.
So he became a better shooter, but that kind of faded in the second half. I don't think he's ever going to be Kevin Durant, number one overall pick, or LeBron James. But can he get into that Paul George range? Can he get into that second-tier superstar range? Because I think Karl Anthony Towns is a top superstar, and you put those guys together, same age, and you keep them going for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the core group of a team that could win a championship.
But all of this conversation might be for naught. The Sun-Times from Chicago just reported, according to multiple sources in Cleveland, not only have the Cavaliers players been reaching out to Butler directly and through back channels over the last 5 days to gauge his interest in playing for the Cavs, one of the sources indicated that Butler would even push the Bulls front office to get the deal done. It would need to be a three-team trade, and it looks like the third team would either be the Lakers or the Suns, and would mean Kevin Love would be traded to Phoenix or LA.
So basically, Kyrie and LeBron have already written off Kevin Love.
Yes.
Sorry, hey, thanks for the championship, even though we kind of dragged you to the championship last year, and we're just going to be behind your back here calling George and Jimmy Butler.
Unless LeBron is saying, okay, I'm going to get Jimmy Butler for the coming season, and then I'll see you with the Lakers the following season. Mm-hmm.
How amazing is it, too, that the Cavs don't have a GM right now? There's rumors that Chauncey Billups is going to take over as GM. LeBron James is making the phone calls.
Yes, he is.
So Chauncey can come in here, but LeBron James is going to go up to Chauncey and be like, all right, dude, here's what's going to happen. And remember, as I tell you this, I can opt out after next year.
He goes up to Chauncey and basically says, here's who I'm calling. Here's what I'm doing. Follow along.
Yes.
If you want to be on the phone, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine. But this notion that, oh my gosh, the Cavaliers are without a GM, what are they going to do? Well, your star player's taking care of it and has been. Don't worry about it.
I want a mock.
Mock!
I want to mock.
Mock!
Gentlemen, I have an NBA mock draft from ESPN.com's Chad Ford.
Okay.
Here's our latest intel based on conversations with NBA scouts and GMs, including potential trades.
Yep.
Number one overall, Philadelphia 76ers via the Boston Celtics. He's got that trade going down. Markelle Fultz, the freshman guard from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers taking Lonzo, number two. Celtics taking Josh Jackson, the freshman forward from Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
He's got Phoenix taking Jason Tatum from Duke, the freshman forward. Sacramento with one of their two top 10 picks, taking De'Aaron Fox from Kentucky, freshman guard. Number six to Orlando, Jonathan Isaac from Florida State. He's a freshman forward.
Mm-hmm.
More on him in a second. And to the Minnesota Timberwolves, number seven overall, according to Chad Ford, ESPN.com, Lauri Markkanen, the freshman stretch four, stretch five from Arizona.
I want a mock.
Mock!
I want to mock.
Mock!
Trigger the inbound, throws it to Markkanen in left corner, three ball, good again.
When he's sizzling, you better watch out.
Let me tell you, because we're up against the clock here, when we come back, let's do a couple things. Let's get to that expansion drafts for the other teams in town discussion. Dan Gladden at 11:30. Lauri Markkanen, I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's one of those names I've read a million times and barely heard out loud.
It sounds completely convincing.
And Jonathan Isaac, I want to tell you what the best case scenario for the Wolves would be come NBA draft time later on this week. Mackie and Judd.
Hang on.
Why would you want to hook it? This sounds awesome. Yeah,
right. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
I would hold these idiots over for another segment.
On 1500 ESPN.